Hello, welcome to Temple Talk. Before we begin, I need to mention a few things. Firstly, I am not an official representative of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, nor am I sponsored by them. I'm doing this on my own time and on my own dime. Secondly, every resource I use to create each episode are all publicly available material approved by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and I will always include links in each episode description. Lastly, if you'd like to learn more about our beliefs regarding the temple and all things, I will also include a link to the website churchofjesuschrist.org in the episode description. Thanks for tuning in, and now for the episode. Hello, welcome to Temple Talk. My name is Camille. I will be your Temple Talker, and today I have a special guest Temple Talker, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Sure. I'm Brenda O'Neill. Camille and I met through the Young Single Adult Ward. So anyways, we've become friends, and I am a wife, a mother, a grandmother. I have 4 adult children, 16 grandchildren, and 1 more on the way next month.
Next month?
Yes. So anyways, I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. Thank you so much. You actually just came from the temple doing sealing, so you are in the zone because we are talking about sealings today. So I appreciate your effort to go towards that. So yeah, this will be the last episode of season 2, where we talk about the sealings, all the ordinances of the temple. We'll be ending on this one before we hit season 3. And I don't know for you, but listening to D. Todd Christofferson's talk from this last conference about the power of sealing, I always thought, oh, sealings apply to just marriage. And it hit me that every ordinance we do in the temple involves the sealing power. He said everything that we do that's in the temple, baptisms, your endowment, it's sealed to heaven. And that just blew my mind. I've studied that talk so many times. I actually was asked to give a talk in church about that. And I had just never thought about the sealing power being everything. Every covenant that we do and that we make is sealed to the Lord.
Yeah,
it's really interesting. But before we get more into that, let's talk about what sealings are, I think, in general. So kind of wanted to start that sealings are binding something on earth and also binding it in heaven, which is part of the gathering of Israel. I'm going to quote the scripture from Matthew 16, verses 19. It says, "And I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven." And then going with that, every ordinance we participate in the temple is through God's sealing power. The temple is a house of forging and binding ourselves to God through covenants and forging families for time and all eternity. I really like, and I talked about the symbolism before with the circle and the square, that the circle represents eternity and the square represents mortality with the finite ends that are there. And so when you're in the temple, it really is a place where heaven meets mortality. I think it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. So everything we do has eternal consequence in the temple, which I think is just amazing. And I think this is the most hopeful doctrine of the church. The fact that families can be together forever. Anyone who's experienced a loss to know that they can meet them with them again, and that those bonds that you make in life can be restored. And again, we talked about this in an earlier episode with Joseph Smith seeing Alvin in that vision and how excited he was that he'd get to see his brother again and know that his brother was able to get those ordinances performed for him. It's just super hopeful. I think President Hinckley had a quote that he said, if nothing else came from the restoration of the church except for the sealing power, it all would have been worth it.
Yeah.
Which is saying a lot because the saints went through some really tough
stuff. Right. I think it also gives people perspective through their trials.
Mm-hmm.
If you know the doctrine of the sealing of ordinances, it gives people the hope to get through anything.
Absolutely. Which I always enjoy doing sealings. I think the most in the temple, I just feel the spirit so strongly because you're doing work for multiple people.
Mm-hmm.
I always love it when you're able to get multiple names done at the same time with a family, and you just that family power. It's God's plan. God's plan is all about families. And so the ability to, again, just forge those links and to know that death is not the end. It's mm-hmm. just the beginning, really, that families can be together. So we believe in our church that God has restored this power that was given to the Apostle Peter to bind or seal on earth and in heaven. The sealing power is exercised in temples to solemnize marriages and to seal together families across generations. Early Latter-day Saints use the word seal in several different but related ways. Seals were used to make contracts or agreements official. Seals of ink, wax, or embossed stamps validated the signatures on a contract. Many Bible readers interpreted passages mentioning the term seal as meaning something that was rendered official in the eyes of God. Early Latter-day Saints often spoke of sealing in this way, referring to prayers, testimonies, blessings, anointings, ordinances, and marriages solemnized by the priesthood as being sealed or marked by divine authority and thereby effective in heaven. Several early revelations given to Joseph Smith further taught that restored authority, ordinances, and covenants could seal individuals up to eternal life. So again, when we talk about sealings today, we'll be talking more specifically about marriages and families, all of the blessings that come with that. But again, every ordinance that we do in the temple is sealed up to the Lord so that he knows that we've done what he's asked us to do as we come before him. So yeah, this is a blessing that we can see that was very important to the early saints. It really got saints involved in doing family history work. That became really important. And again, I think that was one of the most hopeful doctrine that was introduced with Joseph Smith and continuing. And as again, as we refined some of the principles and practices that came along with us, that people who've experienced loss are able to see their families again. And so it's just interesting to know that wherever the priesthood was available on the earth, God's proper authority, that sealings are a part of that because of Jesus Christ. And yeah, I mentioned President Hinckley said that this would have been worth all it was cost. Mm-hmm. So sealings are just kind of a part of our eternal legacy. I know in every temple, they have the mirrors that hang on both sides mm-hmm. of the sealing room. And there's that image of when you look in the mirror, you can see things going on for infinity as the reflection bounces off each other. And it's to show that all of those who have come before and all of those who will come in your posterity are linked because of what you did in the temple that day. And we're not only just sealing ourselves to our family, but to God, basically, and showing that we're accepting Christ as that link that's going to bind us together. So that's kind of our eternal legacy. That was the talk I gave in church, was talking about what do you want your eternal legacy to be? And I know you've had some amazing opportunities to see your family sealed. You had some children, grandchildren that were adopted. Is that mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. We've had, well, first, my husband and I, we were married civilly first. He wasn't a member when we got married. So we were married in the Methodist church, which mm-hmm. really we had no affiliation to the Methodist church. Mm-hmm. But my dad was baptized in the Methodist church. Anyways, my husband was taking the discussions at the time, but had just gotten into that. And I was just starting to go back to church. And so we got married in the Methodist church and we started going to our church. And he was baptized 2 months after we were married.
Okay.
But, you know, we started going to church from then on and holding callings, and it just became part of our life, right? Mm-hmm. It's what happens. But, you know, this was so new to him. He grew up more or less Baptist, mm-hmm. But really it was his grandmother that brought him to church the most. And he just really had a hard time with Joseph Smith and the wearing the temple garments, like what, you know, what did that mean? He just, yeah, you know, it was sure. so new to him.
Yeah, there's a lot to
yes, him. Right. And so we just kept going to church. And then we had our first baby, our second baby. We still hadn't gone to the temple yet. And I was new too, because I was raised at mm-hmm. nine, but not, we didn't really go to church much mm-hmm. after that. So this was all coming back to me too. And I was ready to go. It was one of my prayers that we would go to the temple. I understood. I wanted that blessing in our family. I wanted that commitment to God and mm-hmm. and to make those covenants. And so we took a bunch of temple prep classes.
Good call.
Yeah.
I'm a fan.
Yeah. Probably like five before we actually went to the temple. I think we could have taught them. And then we had this great ward. It was actually in the Klein ward.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
And we were married 8 years before we went to the temple. So cool story that happened.
Yeah.
Brent played racquetball then with our bishop at the time. And they would go early morning before work. He was a stockbroker then and would go downtown, and our bishop worked downtown, and they would go play racquetball and once a week. So one day after racquetball, Brent was headed to work and he got hit by a car, truck, and he was in a truck, but it was a really bad accident. And he wound up flipping and turning over and wound up upside down. And he was pretty much trapped in the car, and one whole side on the passenger side was completely, you know, smashed down to the seats, and he was upside down. and he could smell smoke, and he started seeing feet coming to the car and then the feet going away from the car, and people were saying, oh, it's going to, you know, catch on fire. And Brent remembers that his gas tank was almost on empty, which turned out to be a blessing because it didn't, you know, explode.
Yeah.
And they had to get him out of the car, and he was fine. He stood up. I mean, he had some bumps and bruises, but it was,
gosh,
the paramedic said, where's the guy in the truck? And Brent said, I'm him. No, the guy that was in the truck. And anyways, they took him to the hospital. He had some back issues, but he was fine. And he said that when he was upside down and this crashing, he's, you know, going on the concrete upside down, the thought clearly came to his mind, go to the temple. And since then, we've kind of joked that the Lord really had to kind of hit him over the head to
push him into going
to the, yeah, to go to the temple. But once he had that experience, we made the appointment and we went to the temple, and we had three children then, three daughters. Our youngest was only 9 months old, and our oldest two girls, remember, and they were about 6 and 5, I think. Mm-hmm. And it was just so special because 50 people in our ward came to the Dallas Temple. Another family also got sealed. And
the Dallas Temple fit 50 people in the sealing room? Yeah. Was it tight? Okay, good. Yeah.
It was packed. And there was two families from the ward. So there was, yeah, it was, you know, a great experience. And having our children come in is, it was just super special.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I got the chance to see my cousin. He and his wife and his two kids were able to be sealed a few years ago. And I just remember as soon as they finished the sealing ordinance, they all stood up and just hugged each other. And I remember seeing that embrace, and I thought, that's an eternal embrace and nothing can come between them, which came to be really powerful later when one of their daughters was diagnosed with cancer, and she's gone through so many rounds and she's doing well. But just even that thought that they have that hope that no matter what, they're together mm-hmm. as a family. And it,
the difference.
It really is. I think a lot of people think of the gathering of Israel being either some physical gathering, but really what the temple is for is to help find those who are lost and to bring them back into the family. And it's to help us, to enable us to fully live up to our covenants. I think I had read somewhere, I got to make sure I get this quote right, but basically, the more we enable our ancestors with the covenants that we make on their behalf, the more they're enabled to help us in our life. And so I always say, yeah, if you need more power in your life, go to the temple and do some service
right.
work.
We're gathering on both sides of the veil, mm-hmm. right?
100%. So I'm going to go a little bit into the sealing, the restoration of the sealings and the keys that were given. I'm just going to quote Christofferson. I'll have a link to his talk. It's so good. I thought I should use other resources, but why? Because this one is perfect. He said, it has been prophesied since at least the days of Isaiah that in the latter days, the Lord's ancient covenant people, the house of Israel, should be gathered in from their long dispersion, from the isles of the sea and from the four parts of the earth, and restored to the lands of their inheritance. President Russell M. Nelson has spoken often and powerfully about this gathering, calling it the most important thing taking place on earth today. What is the purpose of this gathering? By revelation to the prophet Joseph Smith, the Lord identified one purpose as the protection of the covenant people. He said, the gathering together upon the land of Zion and upon her stakes will be for a defense and for a refuge from the storm, which again makes me just think about my cousin hugging his family and how it felt like they were just, again, nothing could come between them, but it felt like they were huddling together. And that makes me think of a refuge. They had that protection. There'll be a refuge from the storm and from the wrath when it shall be poured out without mixture upon the whole earth. Wrath in this context may be best understood as the natural consequence of widespread disobedience to the laws and commandments of God. Most importantly, the gathering is for the purpose of bringing the blessings of salvation and exaltation to all who will receive them. It is how the covenant promises given to Abraham are realized. So we have a lot of teachings from Joseph Smith about the eternal nature of marriage, which is very interesting because a lot of Christian theologists at the beginning debated the nature of relationships in the afterlife. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And through the Reformation with English Protestants, they had ideas that there was a society of heaven that included continued relationships, but it changed more, especially in the Americas, to view marriage as more based on love or romance than like a contract. Mm-hmm. And this new outlook on marriage was reflected in religious beliefs. And so Joseph Smith's contemporaries believed that in heaven was a place where they could not only glorify God, but they could also continue to love their spouses. And so it's really fascinating. Sorry, I keep quoting this. Do you want to go ahead and read this quote for me?
This rich Christian context then offers a backdrop to Joseph Smith's teaching that marriage, when performed under priesthood authority, could last into the eternities. In May 1835, William W. Phelps, who was visiting Kirtland, Ohio, wrote to his wife, Sally Waterman Phelps, about this development. Quote, "A new idea, Sally. If you and I continue faithful to the end, we are certain of being one in the Lord throughout eternity." This new doctrine prompted some church members to consider an eternal perspective. The doctrine not only clarified the eternal duration of the marriage bond, but also taught that marriages, when sealed by priesthood authority, could unlock individuals' eternal potential.
Thank you. I feel like, especially, you had been married, you said, 8 years before you were sealed together. Do you feel like you noticed a difference in your marriage after you were sealed? Were there things?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think we had a stronger bond and commitment to each other. We thought of our family as one eternal family and not just for this life. Mm-hmm. And I think it really helps you forge through the hard times in a marriage.
I bet.
Because it's easy if you think that, well, your marriage ends at death. So if you're unhappy, I think it's easier to say, well, I'm gonna do something different.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have that promise and covenant that you've made that we're gonna do this forever.
Yeah.
there's a much deeper level of commitment and a much deeper level of promises and blessings.
I had the chance to go to one of my best friends as she got married. She's very strongly Catholic. Her whole family was Catholic. And I am so honored that she asked me to be her maid of honor, but I had never done any Catholic ordinance before. And I don't know why she picked me, because I knew nothing about what to do. I never understood why people did rehearsals for their weddings, because in the temple, it's just really easy. You just say the words, yes, and that's about it. And I'm so glad. Oh, I'm so glad we had a rehearsal. I'll actually tell this story. It's kind of embarrassing. So I remember I knew my job was to floof the veil and make her look good so I could do that. And as a dental hygienist, I remember we ate breakfast right before she went in for the ceremony, and she had something between her teeth, and I had floss in my bridesmaid dress. I pulled it right out for her, and I was like, I got you. This is why you get a dental hygienist as a bridesmaid. But I remember at the very end, they asked the maid of honor and the best man, is that what they're called, to go up to sign the marriage certificate. And I was so proud of myself for not messing up anything. And I'm signing it. And as I'm congratulating myself mentally, I was walking back to my seat. Apparently, that's when the bride and groom turned back to bow to the altar. And I was right in front of that altar when they bowed. And it looks like they're bowing to me in the picture. Everyone was so nice about it. I was like, oh no, why did you get me to do this? I didn't know what I was doing. But it was actually a very interesting opportunity, because I talked to some of her friends after, and they had questions about what we do in the church with our marriages and the temples, and, you know, why can't just anyone go to the temple and see these marriages, and talked a little bit about that. And they said, what's the one biggest difference between your marriages and your religion and ours? And that was exactly the point I brought up. I said, as beautiful as the ceremony was, the phrase "till death do you part" was kind of sad to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And just to know that we know it's eternal, and that you're working towards that goal. And you're also involving Christ in your relationship, and just knowing that he's allowing you both to stay together. Yeah, I think it just adds more permanence, I think I would say.
For sure. Yeah.
I think it helps you get through.
And what's interesting is friends I've had that are married in different religions, a lot of people believe that their relationships will continue, and maybe even marriages. I don't know, because I think it seems so natural to believe that if you believe in heaven, then it makes sense that heaven would have families and continuation of families. So
We don't talk a lot about Heavenly Mother. I know my mom and I kind of mentioned that in the episode with the initiatory, but that's the pattern. God has a pattern for families. Mm-hmm. I also really like, I'm just going to jump a little bit to this, that Elder Christofferson made the wonderful point that if you are not in a place that you have good family relationships, or don't have family on earth, or, you know, there have been cases of abuse, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked, and again, I'm just going to quote it because he can say it so much better than I can. He said, perhaps there have been instances of abuse, manipulation, divorce, and other trials that splinter that image of an eternal and heavenly family, and the thought of being sealed does not bring you hope. He advised, to you who have experienced the heartache of a divorce in your family or felt the agony of violated trust, please remember that God's pattern for families begins again with you. One link in the chain of your generations may have been broken, but the other righteous links and what remains of the chain are nonetheless eternally important. You can add strength to your chain and perhaps even help to restore the broken links. That work will be accomplished one by one. Which I really loved that thought that, again, even if there's been something awful in the past, that you being sealed to your family, it's still up to the individual. What is it? That salvation is an individual matter, but exaltation is a family matter.
Yeah.
And sometimes just having those covenants made can probably help bring back people that maybe previously wouldn't have accepted the gospel in the next life, but knowing that you were able to do something for them, maybe that will help bring them back too. But
It answers so many questions of how can this work in imperfect families, right? Mm-hmm. Because lots of families have problems. You know, my family had problems. Everybody's family has some problems, right? But to know, and my dad never did join the church, and my mom remained inactive most of my life. But those links are there. And then when my parents, my dad passed away when I was like 30, but my mom passed away just in 2020. So when we finally were able to do their sealings and sealing to us, that was super special because we had a family that, you know, we didn't all go to church, and there were some things, you know, that just heartache to things sometimes. But my sisters, myself, all went back to church in our church. And one sister had a non-denominational Christian religion that she's gone to. And so everybody was pretty religious after we became adults and got married and all that. And some had their troubles and bumps along the way too. But my mom never criticized the church. On my mom's side of the family, it goes back to the beginning of the Restoration of Joseph Smith's days. And so it runs deep on her side of the family to be a member of our church. And my dad almost joined a few times, but never did. So when my mom passed away, one of the first things I wanted to do was seal our family together.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, you have to wait a year. And so I made the reservation after a year had passed. And in that meantime, my mother-in-law had passed away right before my mom. My father-in-law had passed away right after my mom. And so we were also able to do the sealings with Brent and his parents and all of that, because none of his family have been members of the church. We can't find any relatives, any ancestry that were ever members. And so that was such a special experience, along with Brent and I being able to have our kids. When we did the life sealing for me to be sealed to my parents and for Brent to be sealed to his parents, all of Brent and I's kids and all of our sons-in-law and daughter-in-law were able to go to the Houston Temple. And can I share this other story about this? So my mom, she always lived in Texas. I always lived by my mom here. And she always had home teachers or ministering sisters, you know, along the way. And my mom lived in independent living apartments for a while. And she had her home teacher, and he even called me before. He told me about himself, and he was just so loving. And my mom really liked him and his wife, and they'd come over, and she didn't always let a lot of people come over like that. But he was just great and funny and just built a friendship. So that was great. And he knew she had passed away and everything. And anyways, so I was making the appointment to do our sealings with the temple. And when I got the information, I found out he was going to be the sealer. I didn't even know you could request a sealer.
Yeah.
And I didn't know at that time he was a sealer.
Yeah.
It was just this cool, tender mercy connection that he ministered to my mom. My mom really had a connection with him and his wife. And then when the time came for us to be sealed, that he was the sealer.
It's just, Lord knew.
The Lord knew. And it was really special to him too. And just, you know, those kinds of things happen all the time. In fact, when I told the girl that made the appointment at the temple that, you know, the story behind this, she said, oh, we love these stories and they happen every day.
It's amazing. I know when you work at the temple or just go often, you see all of these coincidences that seem like it, but you just realize how involved the Lord is in your life.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's really neat.
That was cool.
I was going to ask earlier, did you receive your endowment the same day that you were sealed?
We did.
Okay.
We did it that way because so many of our friends and the members on their ward at the time were going to come up. It was nice to do that with them, and we filled the whole room and then just go straight into the sealings.
That's so nice. Yeah, basically, for those who might not be aware, when you go to the temple, you'll have a sealer, someone who is set apart to perform the sealings. And you come when you're a couple, and you're able to get dressed up and ready in the full temple clothing. And then the sealer will come, and he will kind of talk with you. Every sealer does it different. Some are way more talkative than others. And they'll kind of meet with you as your family is gathering in the sealing room. And if you are going to see a sealing done, you just wear your normal Sunday clothing, and they have you put on some white socks to help keep the temple clean. So you don't have to be dressed in all the clothing. But you do have to have a temple recommend, and you do have to have received your endowment to go. And yeah, basically, the words, the ordinances are the exact same for you, every sealing, but the sealer can sometimes impart advice. Something I really like, my mom has a tradition that you're not allowed to bring your cell phone into the sealing room, obviously. And so she asks all the guests when we come for a wedding to each try to remember something the sealer said. And then she'll gather everybody's thoughts at the end and send that to the couple.
Oh, that's
when you're getting married, you got a million things going on in your mind. Usually if you have a reception after two, I'm sure it's even more intense, especially if you also receive your endowment the same day.
It's a lot to take in, right?
100%.
Right.
And in terms of the wording of the sealing, it's so much, it reflects the family proclamation to the world. It outlines responsibilities that the couple have towards each other and to God. And their promise that as they make sacrifices, which I'll go a little bit into this, I think it's fascinating that in the temple, we have an altar in which you are sealed together. An altar is a symbol of sacrifice. And so you're starting your marriage on the sacrifice that you make for each other to draw closer to each other and to God. And so that's kind of the basis of basically how that works. And it's beautiful ceremony, very straightforward, very simple. The words are yes, and there's no till death do you part. And then you just get the chance to meet with your family outside of the temple afterwards. They're really lovely and straightforward. And no way I could ruin it. Well, I probably could, but no way like my beautiful friend's wedding that I could have ruined it. Something I think is interesting, and I'll just kind of touch on this, not too much, but have you read all the Saints books that have come out?
Not all of them, no, but I love them. Oh, yes. God. And they're...
That third one, I'm telling you, third one's my favorite. Oh. They have a chapter about Elder Maxwell, and it just makes so happy because I love that man. Shouldn't speak that high. I'm sure that I call him the modern day Isaiah.
Yeah.
To be honest, every quote that's my favorite quote was always from Elder Maxwell. And there was a quote Elder Holland did once that I thought, oh my gosh, a non-Maxwell quote. I love it. And then 5 years later, I found out he was quoting Elder Maxwell. Like, of course he was. So still struggling with that. I like other apostles too. But anyway, they talk about how it was common in the early church to be adoption sealings, that you could be bound to those outside of your family because they wanted to still be connected. And if they didn't have any immediate family relationships that they could be sealed to, that they would be sealed by adoption. But for the next 50 years, a lot of that got complicated. And so that practice was ended until 1894, when President Wilford Woodruff received a revelation that limited adoptive sealings and instead focused on the sealing marriages and parent-child relationships. President Woodruff exhorted the saints to search their genealogies as far as they can and to be sealed to their fathers and mothers. He urged the saints to be sealed to deceased spouses, parents, even those who had not been members of the church, promising that there will be very few, if any, who will not accept the gospel.
I like that.
Really interesting. But yeah, for more, read the Saints book. They're also good.
Well, and if you think about it, before the internet and you know, when we went to be sealed, there was no internet. And so doing family history was really difficult.
Yeah.
And if you didn't have family records, it took forever to dig through and, you know, get records of family. So you can imagine when the church was very early, they had even less access to things.
Word of mouth, really, of stories.
And it just shows how our church is an ongoing restoration, because they just, until they get more knowledge, more technology, that's a blessing in this regard. Like, until certain things happen, you just know what you know, and you have the access to things that you have at that time, and then it just progresses. And so it makes sense that maybe they'd want to be adopted into a family mm-hmm. that was a member, but now we know that you can mm-hmm. be sealed to all your family and your ancestors way back, and it's just...
I strongly believe that our time in the millennium will be fixing all of the temple ordinance mistakes that we've made. Right. I'm sure we've probably made a mess of it, but I think the Lord has allowed us to do that to help us see the blessings and still on behalf of others. But mm-hmm. man, it's going to be nice in the millennium to just say, oh, who were your parents? Where were you born? It's much easier. I'm a big fan of that. You also had the experience of some adoptions in your family, correct? Would you be willing to talk
sure.
about that? I love it.
That was really special too. So our second daughter, her and her husband adopted their two youngest children, two little boys. They had three daughters, wanted more children, couldn't have kids, tried for like 5 years, mm-hmm. and then went to adoption. So they adopted one son, CJ, and then 2 years later they adopted their second son. I'll start with CJ's. So when you adopt a child, you have to wait until the adoption is completely finalized. And then I think even several months after that or something.
It's a tough process.
Yeah, it's kind of a long process. And so when CJ was adopted, so he was about 2 years old when they finally got everything organized where they could, you know, make the appointment and everything. And my son-in-law, Casey, grew up in Logan, Utah. And Chelsea and Casey live in Utah and Orem. And so Casey's, since he was in kindergarten, his best friend was Brian Stevenson, which mm-hmm. is Elder Stevenson's son. And Elder Stevenson is, one of our mm-hmm. 12 apostles. So anyways, so because of that, they reached out to him and asked him to do the sealing for CJ.
It's pretty neat.
And so we got to do that. And Brent and I went, and all of Chelsea's siblings, you know, all of her adult kids and their spouses and all of Casey's family. And he comes from a family of 7 kids, and his parents were all able to be there. And then all of Chelsea's kids, so her 3 daughters, and then CJ and Tex, her youngest adopted son, was already born. So he was there as like just a brand new baby. Mm-hmm. So, but he didn't come into the actual sealing part. So when CJ, he's only a 2-year-old at that point, you know, and Elder Stevenson was giving some remarks in the beginning and just sharing things about the temple. It was really, you know, just a great experience to hear him talk.
He's excellent.
Yeah. And to share like Casey and his family's relationship, because they were all very close and did all sports growing up together and just were at each other's houses all the time. And anyways, CJ, being a little 2-year-old, was kind of walking around. He loved to be by the altar, and he was all dressed in white, like, you know, everybody is in the dealing room. And it seemed like he just knew that this was for him.
Yeah.
Being so young even. And he was just happy and smiling and just still a 2-year-old, right? He wasn't just sitting still quiet. And Elder Stevenson would say, you know, isn't it wonderful to have a child in the sealing room? Because it's not often. Only adoptions and sealings of families that already have kids. And so he just made everybody feel calm. Like Chelsea didn't have to worry that CJ was wandering around. It was perfect. He's in mm-hmm. fact, I think Elder Stevenson said something like, this is what holiness to the Lord is all about. This family is holy. CJ is holy. You know, we're in a sacred space and he's still a child. And it's all good. Like, it's all great, you know. And
gorgeous little boy, too. My gosh.
Yeah, he's a cute little boy. And so we were able to be there for that and witness CJ being sealed. And then 2 years later, COVID hit. Uh-huh. And so all the temples were closed and everything. And so they had to wait even longer. Elder Stevenson said he would love to do it again. And so we did that just when Tex turned 2 last October. Mm-hmm. And same thing, although CJ was now in the room as a sibling. And so he's 4 and Tex was just adorable too. And just smiling the whole time. And he was super calm. He's a little bit more calm. Well, not now, but he was at 2 for some reason. And they're just adorable. But anyways, Tex just hung out by Casey and Chelsea almost the whole time. And it was just amazing. I mean, Elder Stevenson just talked about the importance of sealing your families together, the importance of, you know, that this is the path Casey and Chelsea took to adopt children into their family, and that everybody's path is different, but that this, you know, completes their family, and it's just as binding as if your children are your biological children, as if, you know, as they are if they're adopted in. And you can tell, I mean, their family is just a close-knit family. And yeah, it was beautiful. It was just as special both times. So yeah, it was really special to see our kids. It was kind of full circle, you know, that we were able to bring our kids to our sealing, three of them, and then Chelsea to have adopted kids and go through that process again.
And neat. CJ got to see his little brother.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Have you been a temple worker before?
No.
Okay. I haven't. It's top experience getting when little kids get to come and be sealed. And they're all dressed in the white and they look like little grown-ups and they're just so cute. It's and so every cute. Time, I mean, it depends, but almost always kids can tell there's a difference. And I think, I mean, they're so much closer to the veil than we are that they, I think their spirit remembers more. And I think that they get that familiar feeling of home. And so usually it's pretty, they're pretty in awe, I guess I would say. I mean,
even though CJ was wandering around, he loved hanging by the altar. Like he just loved sitting on the, you know, like the bottom of it and just being there. And Tex just smiled like the whole time. You felt their spirit. You felt like it was just a calmness, even though they were still children.
Mm-hmm. You know? I think my dad was like 9 months old and I think he cried the whole time, but it seems like my dad thing to do. I'm just kidding. But yeah, it's my favorite getting to see children coming in and being sealed to their families. It just, I always tried to sneak in the hallway just so I could see them coming. I didn't want to be in their way, but I loved peeking out behind the corner and just seeing that is amazing.
It's a great day.
Also kind of wanted to touch on this topic. This hits me a little different. A lot of single individuals don't realize that after you receive your endowment, you are able to participate in all ordinances of the temple, including sealings on behalf of those who have passed away, which I highly, highly recommend. If not just for the sake that the day that you get married, I'm sure, probably have seen movies, the day that you get married, everything's really busy and hectic. Mm-hmm. And especially if you're having a reception afterwards and there's so much going on in your mind, that being familiar with the wording of the sealings will help you focus in that moment. And I think that's just the best way you can prepare. And definitely see those blessings that are promised to you, that whether you get married in this life, you will have the chance to get married in the next life. If you don't, that God's plans are families. As a matter of fact, my oldest sister, she's amazing at genealogy, and she has purposely gone through and tried to find some genealogical records of Civil War men who died single. So she has her certain pick. We call it eternal harmony, but you know, it's given her a reason to do family history.
That's hilarious.
I found an amazing article that talked about 5 reasons to participate in proxy sealings for those who are single. It's talking about how it may seem uncomfortable to be sealed to another individual, especially if you don't know them, such as a temple worker or patrons, which I usually just don't struggle with. They're usually very sweet elderly men. I think the one time I did get a young man, he was a temple worker. It was 7 a.m. and we were both holding on to each other to not fall asleep. We kept just jolting awake. So that was as romantic as that sounds. We're not being sealed to them. We're being sealed in the place of those who are being sealed for eternity. So just the joy of getting to do the work for those who can't never seemed to be a problem for me. So some of the reasons, I won't read them all again. I'll post this link, but we come to understand and appreciate the significance of the sealing ordinance to better prepare us for when we get married by understanding our divine roles as a spouse and the responsibilities and blessings that will come from a celestial marriage. That this ordinance allows our ancestors and those who have passed away to obtain the highest degree of celestial glory. We can learn from the symbolism of the temple and sealings put our lives into perspective. It's kind of crazy. You're talking about your husband going through a rollover car crash. I was in a rollover car crash when I was 9. We're coming back from a reunion and our car flipped, I think it was 3 times. We landed on the roof and I just assumed that the car was going to catch on fire. So I was out of there so fast. It didn't. It was fine. But my brain, I kept picturing that scene from The Grinch where the little car catches fire. And that's what I was thinking. I was like, it's going to explode. I'm getting out of here.
So scary though.
It was intense. But we also had some pretty amazing blessings. one of the ones that just sticks out to me is where our heads should have smashed in against the roof. 100%. There were little bubbles, like air bubbles, that pushed outwards from the roof that is gave us our heads enough room to not get smashed in. There's no way that logically, physically could have worked.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, everybody made it okay. We did have some pretty bad injuries in there. But afterwards, when we got back home safely, but yeah, luckily, I mean, considering there were a lot of things that could have gone wrong, I think I had scratches from the seatbelt. It was kind of amazing. Sorry, it's a little bit of a side note. I had decided to build a pillow fort in the car.
Of course.
And almost always I would have taken my seatbelt off to get comfy, but I felt like I should keep my seatbelt on. So I was surrounded in pillows. So I was definitely by far the least injured, shards of glass. And that's actually, I remember very specifically, that was the first time my personal testimony grew. When we went to the hotel that night and knowing my mom was in the hospital getting surgery done and just seeing the trauma that my sister had gone through, because she was the one who was driving with her permit. I remember being angry that I didn't want to say a prayer that night because I was not thrilled at what had happened. And as I was laying down, I pictured my parents always taught me to say my prayers. So I knelt down and I prayed and I told the Lord, I'm so mad right now. And suddenly I just knew I had the choice to choose my testimony or to walk away from it. And I decided I was going to choose my testimony. And that was the first time my personal testimony grew. So it was actually, for me, it was really powerful experience. I really don't look back on it, on all the trauma. I really look back on the growth that allowed me.
Mm-hmm.
But something that I think is fascinating, this is what ties it in, is we all got blessings when we got home from our then home teachers and ministers now.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the really interesting notable mentions were for my mom. It mentioned in her blessing that some of her direct ancestors were physically there as spirits protecting us from traffic. Also kind of amazing. The first person that stopped by, she was just driving. She was a trained nurse and she was able to get my mom to stop bleeding so quickly before the ambulance ever came. So that was like so many cool blessings.
Yeah.
But the one that I will always remember is my blessing told me that my future children were praying for me.
Oh.
And I was 9. I wasn't ready to be a mom. But I remember thinking, I'm a mother right now. And I never thought of that that way. That my children are already there and they're actively involved in my life. And I thought, this is part of my eternal legacy, that the choice that I made to choose my testimony, my kids saw that. And I just always try to think when things are really hard, my children are watching. And so whether you're single in this life and never get married, you're still a parent. You still have the spirits on the other side of the veil that are watching over you and praying for you. And so it just really helps me kind of keep that in perspective. That was pretty amazing. And it's come up a few times in my life since with blessings that my children have been looking out for me. And so again, no matter where you are in your life, ceilings apply because you're.
Yeah. I mean, it just brings to mind President Nelson's advice recently. Think celestial, because things are eternal in nature. And so that automatically gives you a better perspective on life.
100%. This is definitely not official doctrine. This is doctrine according to me. So if it's wrong, my sister, again, the one who's amazing at genealogy and is probably embarrassed I shared the Civil War thing. she made this amazing tree that goes back almost 6 generations of just photographs of my ancestors. She's a gorgeous piece of art. But it's really fun to see the physical traits that get passed down. I know exactly who to blame for my eyebrows in the next life, and he and I are going to have some talking. But I can go, yep, that's that one. But it's fascinating to see, oh my gosh, I got my nose from this ancestor. It's really cool how strong those physical traits are. And I strongly believe that the spiritual traits of our ancestors are passed along as well. I like think that with the faith choice that I made, that maybe faith will be a spiritual gift that my children can have in the next life. Again, it's so individual and this may be totally wrong, but whether your ancestors were members of the church or not, I really think that the courage that a lot of them had and just some of those spiritual traits get passed down, and you can kind of see, I don't know, I feel like when I've learned more about my ancestors, I'll go, oh, that's something that's always been in our family.
That makes sense.
Kind of amazingly, I'm going to see if I can get this right. My mom's side of the family, all of her ancestors were the religious saints, and my dad's side were all the people who persecuted the saints for their beliefs. So I'm like, at least we met in the middle.
We always wonder that about Brent.
Oh, yeah.
His relatives came from Missouri. And, you know, a lot of persecution happened to members of our church in Missouri. We haven't found any proof of that, but we do joke about that, too.
You never know. So that's why I was like, we get our faith from one side, our sarcastic sense of humor on the other side. And I think that's fair. So, yeah, kind of just to wrap up, I think, again, ceilings are our eternal legacy. I had wrote in my talk, when future generations look back on your life, you want to be the one that they point out and say they chose faith over fear, or they had a testimony of Christ. Be that example of a good believer that affects the lives of those around them, that beacon of light who always leads back to the healing power of Christ. Be that one who stayed faithful when all looked dark and difficult. Be that friend, that brother or sister, that child, that parent. And remember, we're all parents now, who didn't just have a testimony of the gospel, but lived a life of discipleship and died with honor. I once read an epitaph for a woman who was very unhappy in her life, very bitter and kind of miserable. They made a movie about her life, but I don't want to say who it is. But when she died, her son said she died loving no one and no one loving her. And I was like, wow. Don't let that be your lasting legacy. Oh my gosh, that's too sad.
Too sad.
Mm-hmm. Be the healer, the peacemaker, the disciple. The highest compliment I've ever heard given was, because I've known you, I've come to know my Savior better. So that should be our eternal legacy. The sealing power is a message of hope. Christofferson affirms us saying, here we see the majesty and sacredness of the sealing power. It makes individual salvation and family exaltation universally available to the children of God, wherever and whenever they may have lived on the earth. No other theology or philosophy or authority can match in such an all-inclusive opportunity. The sealing power is a perfect manifestation of the justice, mercy, and love of God. So I'm glad we got to talk about this because, like I said, sealings are my personal favorite. It's just feels like the culmination.
Browning. Yes. Yes.
Because, again, you have to have all those ordinances done before. And so it's just so wonderful to get to finish it off on that note.
Yeah.
And that's just the best. And I'm really excited. I mentioned to you, I have a really amazing Europe temple trip coming up and get to do some sealings in some different temples. And man, I'm just excited
over you. It's gonna be good. You're gonna see some amazing ones. The realm being the best.
I know.
They're not all, I mean, they're kind all best, of. Right?
I know. I teach temple prep. You've been in my class a few times, and I always say every temple is sacred and beautiful.
Right. They all are.
The church went extra with Rome.
It looks like it. I want to go there.
Spence, oh my gosh, that chandelier. If you haven't seen it, there's an amazing YouTube video of Elder Rasband and Bednar doing a walkthrough of the Rome Italy Temple. And it gets me choked up every time. It's so good.
So my daughter-in-law served her mission in Italy.
She's
anxious to go back and visit the Rome Temple. And my daughter, one of our daughters, did a study abroad in Italy. And she was actually at church the day that the Italy Temple was announced. So the members of her church that were Italian were literally like running up and down the halls, just, you know, cheering, literally that excited about it.
Monumental temple.
It is, right? There's so many reasons. And so that would, that's kind of cool to have those two connections. And I always say, I want to go back with Sydney and Cassie. Cassie can speak the language and they've both been there and have a connection and it can show us around. So
I love it. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciated your testimony of the ceilings.
Yeah, it's been great. It's fun being here.
Thank you so much. You're the best. I love this lady. You were the Stake Relief Society president when I was the Relief Society president in the YSA Award. And I remember I was so stressed about my calling. It was new. And I got a voicemail from you. I was in my family living room. I remember this moment. And I called you and just unburdened all of my stress. And you were just a lifesaver for me. You gave me confidence to move forward when I had just cried for almost a week straight. Because I was worried I was going to screw everything up. And that's
fantastic.
Thanks. That's a testament to the church, is that it's true. If someone like me can be in charge of Relief Society.
You were really... top notch.
Thank you.
You did a great job and everybody loved you. That's what matters, right? I loved everybody and I loved you.
The enthusiasm. That's what this podcast is. I may not be the most knowledgeable or qualified, but I'm enthusiastic.
Yes, so. You are. I think you tap danced one day in Relief Society a little bit.
Did I do that?
You know, you said you were a tap dance teacher. Yeah. At the time and you did a few little steps.
That's something. Yes, I did. Yeah. 9 years of tap dance. So,
something, small, but, you know, I remember that.
I remember that. That's not the most common talent shared among really silly presidents.
Yeah, you did a lot of other things too.
Oh, I'm
No. I mean, like,
oh, good things. Okay, that's good.
yeah, I was always so impressed and would have not known that you were even worried about it, you know, if you hadn't shared that.
I was dehydrated the day that I was called.
Kind of overwhelming, but
it's a lot. It's a big calling, but I'm glad I got to. And honestly, I'm kind of glad I got to do it before COVID so that I could meet in Relief Society every week. It's kind of hard when we have it twice a month.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's all different.
You don't get to connect in sisters as often, and that's tricky. But anyway, so yeah, as always, I will post all of the links that we discussed and scriptures in the episode notes. So feel free to check that out. And I just want to end this episode. If you're listening to this, I was just telling Brenda earlier, the amount of response that I've gotten from people, I genuinely never thought more than 15 people would listen to this podcast. It's genuinely so humbling. I feel like I'm going to get a little choked up. Just getting to see, getting the response of people telling me that they were able to listen to an episode and feel the spirit. And that's just been overwhelming. And I'm just so thankful. So if you're listening to this, thank you so much for your support. And I hope that this helps you feel the spirit. And with that, I think we'll end our episode. So as always, have a celestial day.